Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Saturday morning, our end of the week. Look back. Boy, what a lot of stuff going on here. Matt is in the control room, ready to answer the phones. The number for our Saturday call-in is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. The webcam is running. The chat room is open. All systems are going. We're ready to just rock and roll, full tilt boogie, getting out there the information you need to have. Before we get into the notes I've got for the show today, I want to respond to something we heard in the news break, and they're still talking about, you know, the when pigs fly flu and how bad it is and how you've got to go out and get your vaccinations and so forth. And so on. And they were saying, you know, there have been 11 deaths of children from the swine flu. And that's a tragedy. Anytime you see a small child pass away, anytime you see anybody dies, it's a tragedy. You know, we had a good friend of ours that just a week ago, just, you know, and we're getting ready to go to the memorial tomorrow. And it's always very upsetting and everything. But we need to put this in perspective. More children are dying from measles in the United States than from this flu. And yet we're seeing this continuous media pounding on the situation for the swine flu. I'm still trying to get an accurate number for how many children in the United States are dying of starvation every year. And I've gotten a wide range of numbers. And it is a bigger problem than the swine flu is. So, again, why the focus on here except that it is an excuse to dump a lot of tax money on political donors who own pharmaceutical companies. It's a big, huge moneymaker. I mean, think about it. By and large, at least up until recently, we've been a more or less healthy population. And the problem with a healthy population is doctors and hospitals and pharmaceutical companies can't make money off of healthy people. That's where vaccines come in. It is selling medicine to healthy people. Why wait till they get sick? We're going to sell them something now. Unfortunately, there's some issues with that. Now, I have an anecdotal story to share, and I have to stress it's anecdotal, but, a friend of mine in Germany says that there are presently two different vaccines for H1N1 that are available in Germany. One is from an American company, didn't get the name of the company. The other one is from a company in Switzerland. And apparently, the vaccine from the American company is making people sick all over the place. The vaccine from the Swiss company is not. So nobody wants the American vaccine. There is a shortage of the Swiss vaccine. They're lining up. That's the one they want. They don't want the one from America. Again, anecdotal, first-person story, but that's what we're hearing out of Germany right now. So, moving right along here, and we're going to start off with the economy. As you heard on the news break, there have been some more bank closings. The San Joaquin Bank in California became the 99th bank to be shut down in 2009. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation Fund is in the red. They're in the red. They're basically broke. They're having to borrow to make up for the banks that are going bust. They're predicted to be in the red until at least 2012. And that is based on the assumption that the economy is going to be turning around. And again, from the government, we're hearing, oh, yes, everything's better. Everything's getting better. We're just going to be fine here. You know, no, not a problem here. We're hearing that in California. We've got a story out there where they're talking about how the employment, you know, is still skyrocketing, but not to worry because we're right on the edge of a recovery and it's going to be a high-tech boom and Silicon Valley's coming back and it's going to be great. You know, it's just a shame nobody can actually find a job there. And I mean, and it's just to sort of underscore the impotence of government at this point. Government likes to pretend that they can fix these things. Government likes to pretend they can fix the economy. So far, they haven't. I mean, look around you. What do you think of the job the government is doing trying to fix this mess? You know, they're basically selling us out to the big banks. We're going to get into that in a minute. But so, you know, they love to have a flu so they can act like they're doing something useful and give you vaccines and stuff like that. Or we're going to fight global warming or all this other. Or we're going to stand here in the middle of the town square with our arms outstretched wearing funny hats to keep the wild elephants away. And then when the voters say there are no wild elephants anywhere around, and the government says, see, it works. Please pay us more taxes. I mean, that's the game government plays. They're going to fix things that don't exist, or they're going to act like they can fix things that do exist but don't. Take credit for all the successes, put the blame for everything else on somebody else, like, it's your fault, the global warming thing, and continue to take money. It's a big scam. L. Frank Baum was right. Government is just a snake oil salesman in a funny mask. So anyway, just to show you how impotent government can be, there was this wonderful movie a while back called Deal of the Century. And it was a comedy about arms trafficking, and it starred Chevy Chase and Gregory Hines and Sigourney Weaver. Boy, I'm amazed I'm remembering all of that. And it took place in this mythical South American country and involved all these arms sales. And the president of this country got on the TV and said, you know, we're in serious trouble, and yes, sorry to say, I'm going to have to raise taxes, and it's the fault of those women who wear short dresses in the workplace. And so I'm passing a law that women are going to have to wear slacks, or whatever he says. Basically, there's a problem. We're going to take more taxes, but we're going to solve things by changing the dress code for women. And within the context of the movie, you realize how absurd it is. Okay? But now we have a story, and when I saw this, I said, this has to be a joke. But so far, nobody's come forward to say it's a hoax. There is supposedly a move in California to ban flat panel televisions over a certain size as being excessively wasteful of electricity. Now, I don't know. It's probably not going to go anywhere. I wouldn't expect it to. But this is the kind of, we've got to be seen to do something, so let's just do something no matter how bizarre it looks, that we're going to see from government. You know, along with just coming up with, you know, 5 million tiny infractions that they can use to extract more fines from the people. But it just underscores the fact they don't really know how to fix it. Now, I want to talk here about the 10,000 Dow, because again, on the news break, we heard it. Yes, the Dow is at 10,000. Isn't that wonderful? Doesn't it really mean the economy is working? And if you've lost your home and your job, it's your fault. So don't blame us. Okay, we've been digging into this over the last couple of days and finding out that the 10,000 Dow, and I've been saying this for weeks, it doesn't really measure the economy of the United States as a whole. It measures the strength of the economic indicators, the indicator issues, the ones that are used to calculate the Dow. And remember, over the last year, the Dow has been sort of cherry-picking the best-performing financial institutions to put into that basket of stocks that they use to calculate the Dow Industrial Average. And they're always picking the best performers because they want the number to look really good to attract more investors back into the stock market. Now, over the last couple of weeks, it's become very obvious that what is driving up the Dow is not general profitability and productivity of the United States economy. It is the leading financial institutions. And we've been hearing all this last week about how Wall Street is going to hand out record bonuses this year. And a lot of people, including yours truly, are scratching our heads and saying, in a country where we're losing our homes and our jobs, how is it Wall Street is doing so well? Well, it's really very simple, because when they took all your money a year ago, trillions of your dollars, and gave it to the banks on the theory that the banks would then turn around and loan it back to us at interest, which I thought was a dumb concept. And as it turns out, so did Wall Street. Wall Street took those trillions of dollars the U.S. government gave them from your wallet, these bailout money, and they went out into the depressed economy and they started buying up assets at fire sale prices. And now they're rolling them over and they're generating hideous profits. They were able to take the money they got from the government, and leveraging it, they were able to go out and refinance something like 30 times the total money. So they took these billions of dollars and used it to leverage and borrow trillions more, that they went out and just started buying up all the businesses that were going out of business, all the smaller subsidiary banks, all these real estate properties that were being sold at foreclosed prices. That's why they never went back on the market and depressed housing prices. These financial institutions were buying it all up, and now they're selling it at a huge markup profit. That's what happened. They're getting rich off of your money and paying themselves huge bonuses in the process. If it hadn't been for you and your tax money, they'd be out of business. And maybe that'd be a good thing, because I think we can all look around and agree that having trillions and billions of dollars in Wall Street and nothing left for the rest of the country is not healthy. We're going to be back after these words from our sponsors. Call us on the air, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. And you gotta have proof. Distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far $5.15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the economy, and we're talking about these big banks like J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs. How did they do it? How are they able to be making all of this profitability and handing out these record bonuses? The average bonus going out to a Goldman Sachs employee this year is $500,000. I don't know about you. $500,000 is a fortune. $500,000 would solve all of my problems overnight. You know, that's just where we are right now. I could fund a film project here, get it going in Hawaii, and bring some employment back to our local film community. Boy, I'd like to do that. So how does Goldman Sachs do it at a time when we've lost our manufacturing and the economy's in such bad shape? Are they really creating something of value for society, or is it classic crony capitalism, revolt capitalism? It's definitely the latter. A year ago, the taxpayers are forced against our wishes. Remember when we called Congress 9-1 saying do not give our tax money to the people at Wall Street that created this mess? Goldman Sachs first and foremost among them. So Congress, which we now know are themselves personally invested with these financial institutions, they take several billion of your tax dollars, and they give it to Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, instead of loaning it back to us, which is what they said they were going to do. Okay, remember that sudden last-second change where instead of just buying the toxic assets, they said we're going to do direct capital injections? Well, that's what happened. The money went into Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs turned around and borrowed against that cash injection at a rate of $20 to $30 for every dollar of actual cash they had. It's like the reserve banking system. That's one of the reasons the Glass-Steagall Act was passed, to prevent these financial institutions from being their own banks. Goldman Sachs can take a dollar of your tax money and then turn around and create out of thin air another $20 or $30 to loan them their other division based on that. It's all fancy bookkeeping. So all of a sudden they had trillions of dollars in cash available at a time when everybody else was going broke. So Goldman Sachs went out there and bought billions and billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, in these distressed assets around the world, across the country, and up your street, at these record low prices. Then what happens? The U.S. government takes $23 trillion in your U.S. taxpayer money to reinflate the value of all the toxic assets, which are now owned by Goldman Sachs. How can you not make a huge profit with that? How can you not forget all the fancy paperwork and paper shuffling? And yes, it's legal under the laws that that Congress just shuffled around at the last second when they repealed Glass-Steagall. Goldman Sachs' wealth has just been taken from your pocket. It's a fancy shuffling. It's a little bit of a subterfuge, but that's really what it comes down into a nutshell. Those $500,000 a pop bonuses going out to Goldman Sachs employees came out of your pocket for nothing of any value. Just a lot of fancy paper shuffling and the complicity of the United States Congress. Why did we, the American people, give these banks billions of dollars of our money so they could buy up our assets and then keep the profits. I mean, you know, Goldman Sachs got the uranium out of our uranium mine, and we, the people, got the shaft. And that's really what it comes down to. And you, the Congress did it. The Congress signed off on this. The Congress ramrodded this. Remember that picture of Nancy Pelosi and Barney Frank after TARP was passed? And they're laughing and just smiling because they just voted themselves richer on the backs of the American people. Think about this very carefully. You don't need to go into the fine details. They're hoping you will, that you'll get lost in all the fine little paperwork. Well, this is legal for us to do it. You know, everything every government does that's bad is legal. Everything Hitler did was legal. Did that make it right? When the U.S. Congress is looting you to let Goldman Sachs make this kind of profit, I don't care if it's legal or not. It is morally and ethically wrong. It is corruption. It is crony capitalism. It is fascism. Profits are kept private. Losses are socialized. That is exactly what happened over the last year. You should be angry. Especially if you've lost a high-paying job, or you've lost a business, or you're losing your home, or you've had a car repossessed, or you're not able to pay for your family's medical care, you should be angry. Because Congress and these bankers did it to you intentionally, by design. I've talked before about the so-called impoverishment mechanism. What do I mean by that? Okay, the big lie of capitalism is that everybody can be rich. That absolutely is not true. If everybody were rich, nobody would take out the trash, nobody would fix the sewers, nobody would bury the dead, nobody would fix the roads. Capitalism only works if there's a wealth differential that is maintained by the government and by the banks. Only a certain percentage of people can be allowed to be incredibly rich. That's where politics come in. You're safe, we'll let you be rich. You're not safe, we're going to keep you poor. The vast majority of the American people are intentionally being kept poor in order to keep them from quitting the thousands and thousands of dull, dreary, boring jobs on which our society depends. Fixing the roads, taking out the trash, repairing the bridges, and so forth. Not that we're doing a good job on any of that stuff right now. And every once in a while, we will see the government and the banks attempt to really impoverish the American people so that the wealth of the wealthy becomes worth that much more in terms of how many people it can buy. The goal is to make us all so poor that the wealthy can buy us by the handful to send us out on wars, to send us out, whatever they're going to do here. You don't have to worry about there being a military draft. They don't need it anymore. They have got this entire country on such starvation wages that people are signing up to go off and fight in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and Somalia and Iran rather than simply starve to death on the streets of the United States of America. So that's how Goldman Sachs did it. When you see that Dow going up to 10,000, that's not a measure of the health of the economy of the United States. It's a gas gauge that is measuring the flow of money from your pocket into the pockets of the bankers and the members of the United States Congress, the entire government, everybody. They've all got their money in these banks. They've got all their money in the defense contractors. They're voting themselves rich at your expense. That's what's going on here. It's all scams. It's a government of the scammers, by the scammers, and for the scammers. And, you know, it's like George Carlin used to say, it's a big club, and you're not in it. And that's absolutely what's going on here. All righty. Other big news here in the economy. Then we're going to move right along because Israel is still whining and crying about the Goldstone report. You're just not being fair to us and everything. We're going to talk about that in the next segment. But Russia is ready to abandon the dollar in their oil and gas trade with China. We know that there's talk about phasing out over the next several years the dollar in international oil trade to try and soften the blow on the United States. I don't think it will. At some point, there's going to be a panic. There has to be. It's inevitable. Russia is talking about simply dropping the dollar completely now in their trading with China, that they're just going to go to their own internal currencies. Why should they go to a third-party currency to do business with each other? You know, rubles for yuan, and that's it. The deal is over. And the dollar is going to take it in the keister for this one. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. 800-259-9231. Call us. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When all this twisted steel was swept away,
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're covering the news from this last week. Phone lines are open, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. I was watching the corporate media earlier today, and they have such a very narrow focus view. I mean, in between plugs for the new Spike Jonze movie, Where the Wild Things Are, which, by the way, does look cute, and I'm hearing it's unexpectedly good for an October release. There was another story out there where the cute little talking bimbettes, they're trying to use a little sex appeal on the news shows now, and they were saying, well, Al-Qaeda, we're winning the war against Al-Qaeda, and they had a bunch of these little fuzzy statements. Now, if you're watching the corporate news, you probably would have missed completely that the United Nations Human Rights Council voted to endorse the Goldstone Report on Israel's war crimes committed in Gaza during Operation Cast Lead. And Israel, of course, this last week had mounted this huge public relations campaign, saying you cannot endorse this. It will encourage the terrorists. It'll bring about faster global warming. The asteroids will come down and kill the dinosaurs and all the rest. And just went so totally overboard in virtually threatening governments around the world if they did not oppose this report. And it blew up in their face because they created a political situation where even those world leaders who wanted to help Israel, who are compromised by Israel, didn't dare do so because it would have made it look like they were obeying Israel to the people of their own country. And that does not go over well in most democracies. So we had this vote came through. It was 25 in favor, 6 opposed, a bunch of abstentions, and a couple of countries just flat out didn't say, we're not going to vote. We can't take part in this thing because there's a no-win situation here. Britain was one of them. It was expected Britain would vote against. And apparently that caused such a reaction within Great Britain that Gordon Brown said, we're not even going to go near this one and the whole thing. Now, so what this means is the Goldstone Report is now moving forward towards the United Nations Security Council itself. Israel is throwing a hissy fit. They're out there saying, it's outrageous. It's a farce. You're all a bunch of anti-Semites, and you smell bad, and your mother dresses you funny, and your dog is really, really ugly. And they're just out there screaming anything they can think of to try and derail this thing. Now, the United States has basically come out, and this is a good one. You want to talk about a country that is under the control of a foreign power. American officials are saying that Washington is going to exercise the veto power they have in the Security Council if the report accusing Israel of war crimes is brought to a Security Council vote. Therefore, why even bother discussing and debating it? Israel does not want this to go any further. It is a public relations nightmare for them. And so they've got their slaves in the U.S. government to say, look, there's no point in discussing it. We're going to veto it anyway. You might as well take it off the agenda. It doesn't get any more obvious than that. So, now, meanwhile, what we're hearing from Israel, they're making all kinds of weird statements. Yesterday, Haaretz was saying that Israel's the damage to Israel's public relations is all Obama's fault because he's not staunchly enough for Israel, and he should have never talked about the settlements, and he should have always, as his predecessors have always done, is back Israel 110% no matter what they do. So we've got this situation where Israel is incapable of seeing itself as ever doing wrong because of their religious beliefs about being God's chosen. We had a caller on the air yesterday that was saying they're culturally incapable of ever seeing themselves as being morally wrong. So we're seeing this displacement psychological behavior. They're trying to find something else to explain the Goldstone Report. Yesterday, it was all Obama's fault. Now the theory is, and it's coming out today, this was in Haaretz, the United States is only using the Goldstone Report to punish Netanyahu for continuing to build the illegal settlements in the occupied lands against Obama's wishes. And can you see the desperation here? Culturally, Israel is desperate to find some reason to explain away the Goldstone Report rather than have to admit that maybe their behavior inside Gaza last year was inappropriate for the circumstance. All the more so, I mean, they're out there today, even that their little slave that they had in the U.S. Congress on the 14th, Ileana, whatever her name was, and she's out there saying, Israel has a right to do this. We have to back them. The United States has no other purpose than to back Israel, and everything else she said there. I'm still waiting to find a pair of knee pads for this lady with the flag of Israel on them because she's earned them. She's earned them. There's no question about that. So here's the interesting thing, though. If you go over to Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, There is a report there that admits that during the six-month Egyptian-brokered ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, Hamas succeeded in stopping the rockets being fired into Israel, even the ones being fired by the Palestinian Authority, which had their own vested interest in trying to create a war between Hamas and Israel. Israel's official government website, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and by the way, I made a local copy in case it disappears over the weekend or something. But their own Ministry of Foreign Affairs confirms Hamas stopped the rocket fire during the ceasefire. Why didn't they stay with it? They didn't. On November 4th, 2008, under the cover of the American elections, while the media was distracted over who was going to win in the U.S., Israel attacked Gaza and killed six Hamas officials. The next day, Hamas said, well, I guess the ceasefire's over. You know, we got bombs all over us and everything. And Israel said, aha, Hamas says the ceasefire's over. And Operation Cast Lead began. And they went in there with aerial denial weapons, these so-called flechette weapons, these giant shotgun shells for tanks that just kill everything indiscriminately in this wide fanning arc in front of the tank. And they're not supposed to be used in civilian population areas. And they're not supposed to use white phosphorus on civilian population areas. They're doing all these things, and they got caught. They tried as hard as they could to sever all communications with Gaza, from between Gaza and the rest of the world, to make sure that only reporters who were sympathetic to Israel were allowed to do any reporting there, and it didn't work. Once again, the bloggers got through. The internet got through. Israel still has not picked up on the fact. They are not as able to control the perceptions of the world as they used to. They may own the big corporate media, and they're trying to buy up as much of the internet as they can. They don't control it anymore. It's the bottom line here. Now, the governments of the world may be completely kowtowed by Israel. I mean, it certainly looks, certainly in the United States, that's the case, as this Congresswoman Ileana demonstrated the other day. But the public is not fooled anymore because of the availability of information coming over the blogs and the internet. And this really kind of manifested itself at a recent speech given by Ehud Olmert at the University of Chicago, where protesters basically just shouted him down. There were 30 inside and another 130 outside protesting in the rain, just screaming the names of these Palestinians who were killed during Operation Cast Lead. And Olmert basically had to quit his speech. That is telling you right there that Israel has lost the battle for the minds of America. Doesn't matter how many talking heads they've compromised. Doesn't matter how many of our government officials they have bribed. And by the way, this Ileana got $115,000 from pro-Israel PAC money for her campaigns. Doesn't matter how much control they exercise over the corporations, the corporate media, and the Congress. They can't control the American people. The American people see what's going on. And what Israel is unable to understand, apparently, at this point, because Netanyahu came out today and said, prepare for a long struggle against the Goldstone-Gaza report. They don't understand that from this point on, everything they do to try and block this or derail it only succeeds in making Israel look like they've got something to hide. And that is an important, important thing here. Meanwhile, Palestinian groups have contacted the International Criminal Court in The Hague directly and are providing even more information and evidence of Israel's war crimes, you know, without going through the UN, without going through the Goldstone Report. So the Goldstone Report is only the first of many such efforts to bring Israel's crimes to the eyes of the world and the International Criminal Court. If the ICC decides to act on this new information, the UN has nothing to say about it, and the United States cannot exercise a veto unless they go in and bomb the ICC. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, last segment of hour number one, and we're going to finish up this hour. I want to talk about Orly Tates. Now, if you don't know who I'm talking about, this is a woman who is Israeli and wears way too much eyeshadow. Every time I see her, it looks like she's been in a bar fight and lost. She is a dentist. She is also a lawyer. She is a cornerstone of the so-called birther movement. And she is one of the people who is attempting to bring suit in U.S. court to prove that Barack Obama is not a natural-born U.S. citizen and therefore is ineligible to be president of the United States. Many of the documents she has already come forward with have been discredited as obvious frauds. I don't know why she has not yet been disbarred, because she submitted some of these fraudulent documents as evidence in this court case. That is something that you can lose your law license over. I don't know why she's not being touched on that. But here's the situation. She's out there making a statement, Obama's policies are a clear and present danger to Israel. U.S. President Barack Obama's domestic and foreign policies pose a clear and present danger to Israel, says the driving force behind the campaign to prove Obama was not born in the United States, and blah, 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 blah. So she's got a political motive for this situation that she's trying to move forward here. Now, first of all, okay, we need to understand something very fundamental. Barack Obama's first loyalty should not be to Israel or any other foreign country. He's supposed to be in charge of this country. He's supposed to base every single decision he makes on what is best for the American people. That's his job. And obviously, he's tremendous disappointment since he was voted in almost a year ago. You know, he's had the job for almost a year, and he hasn't kept any of his promises. The wars are ramping up. He's sending more troops here and there. They're shuffling the Guantanamo inmates around to prevent anybody from seeing them, but they're not being released. We don't know the torture is stopping. We could be happening anywhere. It's all this secrecy. He's keeping up the warrantless wiretapping and all the rest of that stuff. It's just amazing stuff. Obama is an absolute disappointment. That being said, I still cannot figure out the motive behind all of these frauds on the birther movement. I mean, I'm going to address this only because I got a flood of email on this topic over the last 2 days. And I want to set out why I am convinced this is all more hoax. Okay, the Democratic National Committee, going into the previous election cycle, had no shortage of candidates. And they had some very good candidates, including Hillary, who I think would have beat John McCain. So why would the Democratic Committee get on board with such a fraud where Barack Obama is run as president even though he's not actually qualified? Because we would presume that the Democratic National Committee, before investing all their money and their reputation in a given candidate, are going to do the due diligence. They're going to check out his background and see what's available, what's there, what could be used to damage or get him out of the race. So the DNC would be watching the dotted I's and the crossed T's very carefully. Then you have Obama's enemies in the race, chief among them, Hillary Clinton, who, going back to her husband's term as president, we know that Hillary and Bill and their minions, they love to dig out the dirt on their opponents. They believe the politics of personal destruction. That was the hallmark of the Clinton years. If there was any evidence that Hillary could have used to get Obama out of the primary, she would have used it. So for this birth thing to have any merit, it means that Hillary's going along with the fraud, or somehow she and her entire staff were stupid this time out. And I don't buy that. I don't like the lady, but I have no doubt she's very sharp. Then you have John McCain of the opposition party. So you would have had the Republican National Committee and John McCain's people looking for anything they could use to defeat Barack Obama. And they didn't find anything on this birth control, this birth certificate issue, birth control, Freudian slip there. They didn't find anything to use. So, does it make sense that Obama got past all those people and little Orly Tates, the dentist slash lawyer from Israel, actually Russia originally, I believe, found all this evidence all over the world to call it into doubt? It just doesn't make any sense. So what is her agenda? What is the agenda driving the people that keep putting these frauds out? And by the way, one more comment about the frauds. If somebody has real evidence of a given situation, they never, ever resort to fake documents because of the risk that if one fake is exposed, it will damage the credibility of even the honest and truthful documents. Sometimes that's actually used in propaganda, where if there's a damaging set of documents on somebody like George Bush's military service, and they can get one fake document into the pile, as they did with Dan Rather, then they can destroy the credibility of the entire body of evidence, even though most of it's real. So anybody who's trying to build a case, like let's say Barack Obama is born in Kenya, and you've got real evidence to support that, you absolutely will not put out any fake documents because you'll destroy your own case. Therefore, the presence of just a single fake document coming out of Orly Tate's group proves they know they don't have any real evidence. And so by implication, the presence of one fake document coming from the birthers implies that all of the documents are fake. If they had a real case, they would have presented it. Instead, we've had fake after fake after fake after fake. There's a couple of them out there now. They're very convincing. But the presumption has to be that they are no more genuine than their precedents or their predecessors. So Orly is out there screaming that anybody who doesn't believe her about Obama being born in Kenya, that they're Obama's brown shirts. I'm not sure that's coming across quite the way that Orly wanted it to. Meanwhile, last story for this hour here. There's a big, huge brouhaha in Congress led by four Republican members of the Congressional Anti-Terrorism Caucus. They're screaming that there are Muslims in the halls of Congress. There are Muslim interns on the floor of the Congress, and they're trying to influence the Congress. I mean, given how much of Congress is on the payroll of AIPAC, which has already been charged and exposed for espionage several times, and makes no secret of the fact that they buy and sell congressmen for lunch every day, I think it's rather amazing that these four Republican congressmen are getting their knickers in a twist over some Muslim interns. Are they trying to create a Muslim-free zone? And if so, is that not a violation of the First Amendment? Congress shall make no law respecting an institution of religion. We have all these Christians all over the U.S. Congress. We have all these Jews all over the U.S. Congress. Why is it a problem for Muslims to be all over the U.S. Congress? Unless, of course, Muslims are the designated scapegoat as the U.S. government goes back to reprising Hitler's playbook. Gotta have an ethnic minority, blame everything on. Gotta have an ethnic minority. Muslims, it's your turn. We get to beat up on you and put you in the concentration camps this time. The sheer hypocrisy here, I think, does call attention to itself. For them to be making a big stink about some Muslim interns, and I'm not even sure they've actually identified any, but they're just saying it's an Islamo-conspiracy, and they're going out there. And at the same time, I think most Americans can be justified in saying, wait a minute, didn't we just get done with this whole AIPAC situation where we've got all these Israeli spies running all over? Didn't we have Carl Cameron saying that there was evidence that linked Israel's spies to 9/11 and our government was classifying that? And you want to make a big stink about some potentially Muslim interns running around the Congress? Are we not supposed to be an all-inclusive nation? I mean, it doesn't really, you know, I mean, certainly everybody in Congress is pushing an agenda. There's no such thing as an intern that is there just to run papers around. They're all there with the agenda of whoever lobbied to get them accepted as an intern or a page at the Congress. So there's no question about that. But it seems like Israel is feeling their iron-fisted control of the U.S. Congress is being threatened. And they're trying to fan up this idea that nobody but Israel's interns should be allowed to approach the U.S. Congress. They're trying to protect their turf. They want a private hunting reserve among U.S. congressmen that only they are allowed to prey on and bribe and blackmail and so forth and so on. I guess they don't want the competition is what it comes down to. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to be talking about an email I got on World War III, whether your cell phones can spy on you, some computer issues, and some more issues about dictatorship. When we come back, phone lines are open, 800-259-9231, and we'll be right back. And aloha, America. Welcome to hour two of our show. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We got somebody waiting on the phones. We got a little dialogue going on in the chat room in response to my comments about the birth certificate controversy, where there was an article that was supposedly in the Honolulu Advertiser. We're still trying to track that one down. I've got a call into the staff writer who wrote that. It's not been returned yet. But that article claimed that Obama was born in Kenya. Then there was another... I'm sorry, that one said he was born in Indonesia. Then there was another article that supposedly said he was born in Kenya. And the point I'm making here is, obviously, both of these articles cannot be correct. And if you really think about it, we now have three birth locations given in various newspaper reports. Hawaii, obviously the overwhelming one. Kenya, and then Indonesia. So obviously, at least two of these reporters are wrong with their facts. And given that most reporters these days just sit and echo whatever's coming in over that news feed from the big news providers, the propagandists, it's entirely possible that, you know, that the ones saying Indonesia and Kenya were completely wrong. Certainly when he was living in Indonesia, he was basically being treated as local boy. And we really don't know. The only official document we have is, of course, the birth certificate from here in Hawaii. And the bottom line is, at this point, you know, I'm wondering why so much effort's being put on this. Because at this point, it should be obvious that even if there was anything, even if there was any merit to this, nobody in the official organs of the U.S. government is interested in looking at it. You know, it's sitting in the court, and basically they're generating a lot of press and a lot of distraction with it. It's a big, huge distraction. They're trying to get people... I think it's along the line of the no-plane debate, personally, myself. It's just there to give the Internet something to complain about and thrash about, like no plane and no Apollo and all the rest of that stuff, so that we're not paying attention at more important things, like exactly how Goldman Sachs looted all this money from the American people that they're now proclaiming is their profits and $500,000 per staffer bonuses. So... But again, if you've got one newspaper report saying he was born in Kenya, and you've got another one saying he was born in Indonesia, obviously one of those guys is wrong, and probably both of them, given the quality of writing we've seen coming out of the corporate media lately. All right, end of that. Well, actually, we've got a caller on the line. John in Ohio. Aloha, John. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind this morning?
Frankly, I've got a segue. I haven't been able to pick up your program this week, but I did want to just comment on this ridiculous Orwellian obscenity satire of Obama getting the Nobel Prize.
And, join the club.
Yeah, you know, of course, he joins the number one war criminal of the 70s and beyond, Henry Kissinger, mm-hmm. Killing millions of people in Vietnam and Indochina and overthrowing the democratically elected government in Chile and killing scores of thousands of people. But at any rate, I think it's really dangerous that so many people haven't... a lot of people haven't caught on to exactly the fact that he says one thing and does the other. I just heard on the news at the top of the hour that he was bashing, allegedly bashing the insurance companies when he got as much or more from the insurance companies, Wall Street, Goldman Sachs, and all the rest of the vultures and the war industries than McCain, Bush, or the Republicans did. And he talks, you know, occasionally a liberal line the most cynical way to cover up the fact that he... is actually financing, trying to push a plan that would actually funnel huge amounts of money into the insurance companies, and he's controlled by them, and he eliminated a single-payer Medicare for All type plan that completely barred them from the discussion and brought in all the insurance company moguls. So I'm thinking that this guy is really successful, at least among a segment of the population, in convincing. I was talking to somebody in a restaurant the other night, and they didn't know that he has expanded the war in Afghanistan, that somehow he's able to betray even those who are on his voting base into thinking somehow that he's something other than what he is. And I think it's really dangerous because things like the fact that he supports the Israeli government's warmongering. He is completely refused to, just recently, and it shows the control of the media, the terrorist who blew up a plane, a Cuban airliner, killing all people in 76,
mm-hmm.
are now walking free in Miami. The people who came into this country to try to stop this terrorism, told the FBI about it, are now spending life terms in prison. The media has completely censored this, even though their appeal has come up just a couple days ago, because it completely cuts across the idea that the United States is not interested in freedom, democracy, or fighting terrorism. They are the terrorists, and they're supporting and harboring terrorists in this country right as we speak, and the media is covering this up. Anything that has to do with questioning the noble, angelic intentions, you're allowed to say that this government makes mistakes, tactical mistakes, but you must follow the catechism that the United States government is interested in freedom and democracy while it slaughters people in Iraq, Afghanistan,
That's the double standard we've been seeing for years. I mean, you know, ever since the end of World War II, we've had over 30 military interventions by the United States into various places around the world, and always we're being told we're bringing freedom and democracy and the American way of life to these other countries, whether they want it or not, and then we find out afterwards all we've done is gone in, overthrown the democratically elected government, put in a pro-American puppet that allowed American corporations to come in and basically loot the place, you know, for the benefit of the empire, and that's what's going on here. Now, as far as the Nobel Prize, you're absolutely correct. It was a joke for it to be given to Henry Kissinger, and it was a joke for it to be given to Al Gore. It was a joke for it to be given to Elie Wiesel for a book which turned out to be complete fraud, and it's a joke for it to be given to Barack Obama. Now, we're hearing now that the majority of the Nobel Peace Prize panel did not want to give it to Obama, certainly not on the claim that we're giving it to him for his unrealized potential, because already they were saying, we have no way of knowing this guy's going to keep his promises. He hasn't kept his campaign promises. And apparently this was ramrodded through by the chairman of the panel. And if you're looking for a consistent pattern in the recent awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize, it appears to be going to anybody who supports the push for global government, which certainly Al Gore was doing with his global warming hysteria, and certainly Obama seems poised to do as he signs this latest global warming treaty, which will cede some control over U.S. internal policies to a global environmental authority. And now they're talking about a global financial authority, they're talking about a global health authority. There is a push for global government. Obama seems to be right on track with going along with that, and that's why, maybe probably why, he got the Peace Prize. I can't think of another reason.
Right, Mike, and another thing, I was reading on WSWS.org that Europe is probably being cut in on the blood loot for this massive increase in militarization under Obama and expanding the wars, and Bush was not able to get their support, and that's why he has become the golden boy of the elite in this country, because he has been able to, I think, bribe some of the elite in Europe that if you join in this NATO worldwide push for global domination and war, we'll cut you in on the loot. And Bush was not willing to do that. And I think this reflects the Nobel Committee giving him this prize, because he's simply willing to get bring the other wolves in on the these countries.
The New World War. Okay. All right. Listen, we've got we're running out of time here, and I'm going to have to let you go here, John. Thank you very much. We got a bunch of other callers on the line here. Actually, though, I'm not going to take another call until after this next commercial break here. But John is absolutely correct. The Nobel Peace Prize, what we have, when you have a group of people that are attempting to cloak themselves with a sense of legitimacy, they're going to give themselves all kinds of awards and medals. They'll create all kinds of awards to give to themselves so they can go out to the world and say, look, I won these awards, therefore you must listen to what I say and do what I tell you to do. And certainly that was the case with Al Gore when he was out there with his global warming film, Inconvenient Truth, which we now know was filled with all kinds of outright falsehoods and errors, and yet he got an Academy Award for it, and he got the Nobel Peace Prize for it, and he got hundreds of millions of dollars to market global warming to the world. Why? Well, first of all, it's going to make a fortune off the carbon credits scam. Second, it was one of the three foundations on which the global government would be based. We're going to take a break. We'll be back to take phone calls after these words from our sponsors.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. We're going to go right to the phones. Brother Solomon from Brazil. Aloha, Brother Solomon. Going to have to be fast. The phone lines are loaded up.
Salve, meu querido hermano Ribeiro, como vai você? Good morning to your distinguished audience, and thank you very much for accepting the call. I'm still angry, as much as our brother Sam, the pilot in the Netherlands, that called you probably about 2 weeks ago. So you, I, and Sam, we can fly together in an angry formation.
Okay.
Okay,
we'll sort of be like the Blue Angels of Rage.
Exactly. You will be numeral one, and we will be your wingmen.
Sounds good.
Okay,
because
well,
I'm a lousy pilot. Try and keep up with me.
Exactly. I want to make a comment. It can sound humoristic, and then one that is not very humoristic. But the one is that you also forget that Obama might have been born in Brazil.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, because of the...
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. I just figured out what's going on. Remember the boys from Brazil?
Exactly.
There's actually 20 Obamas, and there was
exactly
one of them.
Gregory Peck, Boys of Brazil, exactly.
Ah, okay. I love Sir Laurence Olivier in that film.
Well, see, you have another place that Obama might be born there. Yeah.
We got him in a test tube out here in back of the still.
Exactly, and the other very short pair of humor here, that you
yes
didn't read the fine print on the cap and trade bill, because they also, in case that it happened what is happening today, that we have 30 years of trend of cooling the planet, they changed the law, and now it's a cap and trade tax for global warming.
Well, it's a carbon cap and credit tax system. They don't actually say what it's for. They're trying to use global. Well, actually, they've rebranded. They've stopped calling it global warming because the planet's obviously getting colder, and they're just saying it's climate change that they're opposed to now, which is stupid. It's like being opposed to the turn of the seasons or the orbit of the moon or the falling of the rain. Climate change is what happens on Earth. Attempting to stop it is artificial. It's also impossible. Our technology is not going to... What are we going to do? Tow the Earth around to make sure it's the correct distance from the sun? Are we going
exactly
to tip the entire Earth so it's straight onto the sun so we no longer get the seasons? It's nonsense what they're talking about. But it's they panic people into thinking there's a crisis that can be solved with taxes and obedience, and then they extract taxes and obedience. It's the same scam. They've been doing it over and over and over again. I think at the dawn of the third millennium, we need to say this has no more merit than rule by divine right. It's time to let it go and find a better way to organize our society.
What I want to make you, this is a short comment, dear brother Ribeiro. It's time that we change our language and stop repeating government propaganda, because it is an unconscious, in a very unconscious way. When we talk about the private sector, as an example, Al Gore and his associates are investing $150 million in anything. Well, if after giving the private sector $23 trillion in bailouts, how can we call that the private money? That is public funds. Then I know nothing about economy then. In my humble opinion, that is not private money. That is people's money.
That's exactly right. That's exactly my point here, which is why these profits that Goldman Sachs is declaring and these bonuses this should be money that's returned to the people, and it isn't, which is why we're in a fascist economy. We're not capitalist anymore. We've blown right past socialism. We've gone right into fascism without even a pause here. Brother Solomon, we have to let you go. The phone lines are loaded
up. Brother Rivero.
Call in again. We're going to switch over to Thomas in Sweden. Aloha, Thomas. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Good morning,
Thomas
Rivero.
Good morning.
Solomon, he's a tough act to follow. I had about 37 topics here.
Well, start with number one. We'll cut you off at the commercial break.
Okay. During the newscast, we heard that the school in New Orleans, as I pronounce it, was so great, according to His Holiness Obama, because the people had hope.
I have a saying up on the wall here. It says, people who live on hope will die farting. And I think I got that from Robert Heinlein, which is basically, I mean, hope doesn't get you anywhere. Yes, we all want to hope for a better world. I'm sorry. Screw hope. I don't want to hope for a better world. I want the better world. Stop giving me hope and stop telling me that things are going to be better. Either make them better or quit the job.
Yeah, I'm hoping to go to the beach tomorrow and go swimming, but I had better have my line thermal swimming trunks on because winter arrived here 3.5 weeks too early this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's actually very cool here in Hawaii. Go ahead.
I know we're in a hurry here. I'm thinking about the Muslim pages in the Senate and so forth, mm-hmm. or these lobbyists or whatever. There's a weird ultra-nationalist party here, and they say, we don't want Islam in Sweden, they say, because it's a Middle Eastern religion. We only want Christianity. These are the same two guys. These are the same two guys who say, we're going to emigrate to a country that won't let any foreigners in.
Man, I love that. We don't want any Middle Eastern nations. We're a Christian. Middle Eastern religions, we're a Christian nation. I love it. Is that quote... Yeah, is that quoted anywhere? Could you send me a URL? I have to post that. That is just precious.
No, this is a guy actually told me this at a political meeting for one of these ultra-nationalist parties.
Oh, God, that is so funny. That is so funny. That is just amazing. You know, I sort of, he fits in that category of people who think that the historical Jesus Christ really would have looked like that very obviously European guy on the Shroud of Turin. You know,
he looked pretty
amazing.
Swedish. He had blonde hair and blue eyes, and he was about 8 meters tall.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is just amazing. All right, well, listen, anything else, Thomas?
No, that's about all I can come up with. Thank you.
Well, that was wonderful. Thomas, thank you very much, and please call in again. And we've got George in Indiana. Aloha, George. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey. You were talking about these different news articles. I've got one here that's, it looks like innocent admission. It's the Daily Standard out of the Standard LTD in Nairobi, Kenya. It's dated June 27th, 2004. The headline says, Kenyan-born Obama all set for Senate race.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing I'm pointing out. We've got these people saying he's in Kenya. We've got the Honolulu Advertiser saying he was born in Indonesia.
His grandma said she saw him birthed in Kenya.
No, we've got all of this stuff all over here. I got to tell you, it just doesn't feel right to me.
Well, if there's
like
something wrong.
Well, I think what it is, I think we're being set up here. I think we're being suckered in. It's like the no plane at the Pentagon story or the no Apollo moon landings. It's something that's being planted to make the blogs look bad because right now the government, especially the government of Israel and the corporate media, they are losing ground to the online alternative media, and they can't all of a sudden become trustworthy themselves. All they can do is try and find something and plant stuff on the net to make us look really, really bad. And I think this is more of the same. So thank you for the phone call. We're going to let you go here. We're going to take a break here. It's the bottom of the hour. We've only got another half hour on the show here. If you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and we will be right back.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And got into a little kind of an email discussion with somebody. And we started out talking about the draft. Was there going to be a draft or not? And I pointed out, at the moment, the U.S. government doesn't need a draft because by destroying all the jobs, they've created a situation where young people coming out of high school, coming out of college, they've got a very simple choice. They can join the military or they can starve to death in the streets of America. Starvation's becoming a big problem. We got sweatshop conditions across the country. By impoverishing the people, they have made it possible to convince the people to do whatever the government wants in exchange for a few pennies, which is really what we come down to. And the person I was having the debate with said there won't be a draft as we have known it back during Vietnam days until World War III starts. And then it occurred to me, how do we know when it started? Because if you go back and look at the history of World War I and World War II, it's not like somebody got up and said, we're starting World War I tomorrow or World War II tomorrow. War had been going on quite a bit. I don't think, in, certainly in the case of World War II, it wasn't considered a world war until the Japanese got suckered into the attack on Pearl Harbor, and Roosevelt used that to get the United States into the war against Hitler. At that point, it became a world war. But war had been going on for quite some time before, going back to Hitler's invasion of Poland, the Sudetenland, all that other kind of situation. Now, we know with World War I, it ostensibly began with the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. And all these European nations that had all this complexity of all these mutual defense pacts, they found themselves at war with each other almost overnight. But I think future history may look back. If we are, in fact, heading into a global war, future historians are probably going to look back and say that it was already started by this particular point in time. Because we've got the United States is doing exactly what Nazi Germany was doing. We're invading one country, then we invade another, then we invade another. And again, the same plan that Hitler had with Poland. Stage a fake terror attack or a phony attack, in Hitler's case, on the twin radio towers in Gleiwitz, Germany, in Bush's case, on the twin towers in New York. Blame another country for it, in Hitler's case, Poland, in Bush's case, Afghanistan. Go in and start a war there. And then once everybody's thinking in terms of war, just sort of drift into France and Norway and Austria and Belgium and all the rest of that, or in Bush's case, into Iraq and so forth and so on. Now we're in Somalia and Pakistan and trying to get justification for a war in Iran. We're briefly in Georgia via proxy. That was a proxy war. And so I think if, in fact, that, Barack Obama is already back in South America. He's establishing all these military bases in Colombia from which the Pentagon can project power over all of South America now, reestablishing American hegemony down there. And I think if there is a major global war on the horizon, and a lot of people think it's a possibility, I think future historians will realize that it was already underway right now. We just were too dumb to realize it. And I think that's kind of where we are. I am still hopeful that we can prevent a world war by allowing the U.S. government and the U.S. economy to simply collapse, which it seems headed to doing. And the reason I say that, and I get a lot of email from people saying, well, if the U.S. decides to get in World War III, you need to back the country and be a patriot and support it and all the rest of it. They say, well, I obviously, like anybody else, I want to be on the winning side, but my concern is, and I think a lot of people will agree with me, the United States prevailed in World War I and World War II, both because we're over here on this side of the Atlantic, and because we had this incredible industrial capacity. We could crank out the war material faster than the enemy could blow it up. We don't have that anymore. We don't have either of those advantages anymore. In this age of intercontinental ballistic missiles, we are not, or the United States mainland, is not all that isolated from the other combatants in a new world war. Second, and this is more important, because the civilized nations may all say, well, we're going to have a world war, but we all agree not to use nuclear weapons on each other until we're really close to losing, and then all bets are off. But the United States does not have the economy to support a new world war. We do not have the industrial base to support the material production necessary to sustain and prevail in a new global war. We're barely keeping up with what we've got now. In a new major global war, if it goes nuclear, the United States might win, because we've got all those warheads out there and the psychotic government willing to use them. But in a conventional global war, involving Iran, Russia, and China, the United States is going to lose. And if you don't want to know what losing a war, a world war, looks like, you look at Germany during the aftermath of World War I, World War II, and what happened there. That is what is coming to the United States of America if we allow the U.S. government, and specifically Israel, to trick us into a war on Iran, which will mean war with Russia. I cannot tell you how dangerous this is. We can't win the war that Israel wants to set us up with. In fact, Israel may not care. The bankers don't care. Bankers love wars, and they don't care which side wins. because both sides go into debt, and the bankers will make tons of money off of that debt. Look at the run-up to World War II. You had American companies like IBM were selling Germany computers, early computers. Hitler was being funded by American banking interests, Brown Brothers Harriman, the Bush family, Prescott Bush, helped finance Hitler's rise to power. And before the outbreak of war, they made a ton of money off of those slave labor camps that were being run all across the Nazi Empire. Then on the day war was declared against Germany by Franklin Roosevelt, he nailed the Bushes and Brown Brothers Harriman for trading with the enemies. But at that point, they'd made so much money, it didn't really make any difference. That's how the game is played. Wars are created to make bankers and industrialists rich. Wars are created to destroy the accumulation of wealth by the common people, to put them in a situation where they have to start building and buying all over again. That's what war does. We're being set up for one. I think Israel, in their efforts to get the United States and Russia into a major war, they don't care which side wins. They're hoping both sides will be destroyed. Because if the United States and Russia destroy their respective nations in a prolonged global war in Iran, a regional war in Iran, that will leave Israel and its hundreds of nuclear weapons and delivery systems functionally in control of the entire Middle East. Eretz Israel will become a reality. And anything within the reach of Israel's nuclear weapons will be under their functional control, including what's left of the Middle East oil, which they will then use basically to enforce their will across pretty much the rest of Europe. I think that's their long-range plan. Israel is not friend of the United States of America. Look at how they're bashing Obama. They're dumping the blame for Israel's embarrassment of the Goldstone Report on Barack Obama. So, you know, it's a psychotic situation, and it sounds like something out of a Tom Clancy novel, one of the early ones when he was still doing some really good writing. But that's how I see it. The bankers don't care which side wins in a war. They just want more war. Wars are good for business, for their business, not for us. And Israel welcomes any war that destroys Israel's enemies and leaves Israel stronger relative to the rest of the world. That's their game plan. All right, moving right along here. We're almost to the end of this segment. Boy, today has just gone right past. Right past. And thanks to everybody who called in, because you make it a lot of fun here. Speaking of phones and calling in, we are hearing more and more that while Americans are becoming very tech-savvy about their computers, their laptops, regarding security, that a big security hole continues to be the smartphones. Now, we know the smartphones, like the BlackBerries, the Trios. I used to have a Trio. It was really cute. The iPhones, all of these phones are very powerful tools, and they become essential components of our daily life in this technological age. But amazingly, people are not paying attention to the fact that the data they work so hard to protect on their home computers and their laptops is on their iPhone and open to all kinds of malicious tampering, not the least of by the government itself. We're going to be back after these words from our sponsors. Call in 800-259-9231. Your last chance to get on the air today. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I was talking with the chat room people over the break here about how terrible I am at asking for money. It's why we're on such a tight budget over here at whatreallyhappened.com. And, I really am. It's just the way I was, you know, raised. I'm not greedy enough to really survive this culture here. Somebody was going on about, let's see, I'm trying to read back on this thing. I could be a preacher for real. I'm actually ordained in the state of California. We got a caller on the line. Angel from Minnesota. Aloha, Angel. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hi there. I was going to talk about vaccines.
Okay.
If that's in line with your subject line there.
We don't really have a line. It's kind of a big blob thing that we just sort of dance around on during the day. So go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, this, the whole deal with the vaccines is such quackery. I've got three kids myself that are poisoned from the vaccines. They're on the autism spectrum. I've got one that has he has ADHD. The other one is autistic and allergies and asthma. And it's just freaky to see people just trust in the CDC and the WHO and everything and just go ahead with what they're saying and get their kids vaccinated.
Well, you know, it's all about making money. It's all about selling. And it is very, very scary. Now, I presume that you're familiar with Jim Carrey, and I'm blanking on his partner on this situation. They have a foundation where they're putting out a lot of very good information about detoxing. It's been shown it is actually possible to reverse some of the toxic effects of some of these mercury-based preservatives. And you've done it. Good. Good. I am so glad to hear that.
The main problem with it is that when you take a vaccine or antibiotics, it actually kills the good bacteria in your intestines.
Yes.
And what happens is because that space is, because where that good bacteria used to be is now gone, the yeast that is supposed to be in small quantities in your system actually overgrows, and it's called yeast overgrowth.
Mm-hmm.
And with my son, he's autistic. He got the worst of it.
Mm-hmm.
He actually has roots that have formed from that yeast, and it perforates the walls of the intestines.
Oh,
and then gluten and milk proteins come through there and leak through those holes and attach to the opiate receptors in the brain, just like morphine or narcotics, anything like that. And we actually went through withdrawal. He, at the worst point, he took a pencil to his little brother's eye, and he said,
"Ouch!
What are you doing? What are you doing?" And he says, "Oh, I'm just trying to check things out." So in his eye and out his ear. And
okay.
At that point, I'm like, "Something's really wrong." And I've turned him around completely with a diet, gluten-free, casein-free diet, fish oil, and nystatin from my allergist.
Okay, well, here's the deal here. And
it sounds,
bless you for being so involved in your children's health and understanding that what we are getting from the orthodox corporate medical establishment is not always good. And I'm like the vast majority of Americans. I was raised with TV and media constantly telling us the wonders of modern medicine and how we could all trust them. And they were doing all these wonderful things. And it was so much better than the days when they would put leeches on you to cure certain diseases. And then I went through the situation with my wife and her joint pain for all these years, where it was just an excuse for them to sell us thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of crud that didn't work. Then we found out it was the household products that were the problem, and the cheap cosmetics and stuff like that. And we're hearing more and more of these stories like, I was at a point where I was about ready to submit myself for treatment for diabetes to the hospital. Then we found out I was simply reacting to high fructose corn syrup. And I've gotten all these other chemicals out of my life, like the MSG and the aspartame, and my health is all of a sudden, wow, I'm doing a lot better than I was all this time. And I didn't need a doctor to do it. I just had to understand that we evolved to a certain kind of dietary expectation. And if you start putting in all these synthetic chemicals, they're going to have side effects. And nobody's testing for it. The most dangerous are these genetically modified crops, where the only thing they test for is the desired result, and they're not looking anywhere else in the organism for toxic, unexpected side effects. And they're beginning to understand that that's a big problem. You can't just alter one gene and get one effect. You alter one gene, and it cascades through the entire genome, causing all kinds of unexpected side effects and stuff. So you've got to be really careful.
Yeah, like Revelations 18:4 or whatever. I think it's 18:4. Do not.
Well, I would have no idea.
Do not accept the plagues. Right? Like.
Yeah, I would understand that. Yes, and the bottom line is here: if you can't pronounce it, don't put it in your mouth or your body. Is my my situation. So, Angel, thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to let you go. And, Jim Carrey, I had this on the website just the other day, and I'm blanking on the woman who runs this, and Jim Carrey has come on board to lend his name and fame to it. But it's a website. It is a clearinghouse resource for ways to detoxify people who have suffered tremendous damage from these vaccines. We have a very good friend out here on Oahu by the name of Don King. He works as a camera operator, and he's done some incredible work. If you've ever seen the documentary Riding Giants, Don King shot a lot of that. He's an amazing gentleman. He and his wife have an autistic child, and they produced a documentary, Beautiful Son, which was up for a film award around here as well. And so if you get a chance to see that or buy the DVD. Same thing with them. They've gone through a detoxing program. They have managed to reverse a lot of those symptoms of autism. Final note on this, and then we're going to move along. The Amish people in the United States of America do not accept vaccination on religious grounds. The Amish children do not get autism. Never, not once, has it ever happened. And that's just something you need to keep in mind. Our medical establishment is all about making profits, making money. What is vaccine? You know, if we're a healthy nation, they can't make any money off of us. If we're not sick and we're not going to the doctor and we're not buying medicines and we're not going to the hospital, they can't make money off of us. What is vaccination? It is simply selling medicine to people who are healthy. There have been cases where, in fact, I ran this story where there was actually a lawsuit brought against a group of doctors that came into a community and everybody was healthy and they said, we need a vaccination program. And the vaccination program made the entire community sick, and the doctors were all getting rich treating the symptoms from the vaccination program. And they wound up literally charging these doctors and putting some of them in prison. The story was kind of downplayed for the obvious reasons, but it really did happen. The doctors, the medical establishment, want you to be sick because that's how they make money. There was a story of collusion with the Eli Lilly company that was out there promoting the synthetic bovine growth hormone be added to cows and dairy products and everything, even though it was known to be causing cancer. Why? Because Eli Lilly is the largest manufacturer and seller of certain kinds of chemotherapy. So it's really a very scummy business. Now, speaking of scummy business, and we're going to move along here. We're almost to the end of the show. We all have laptops, and we all know from time to time they break. And there was a recent series of TV reports done by a small local TV station where they took a laptop, they had their IT guy disable the hard drive in the BIOS. Takes a minute to do. And should, in theory, be a very easy detection and fix to correct it. And they took it to three different stores, three different big chains, Best Buy, Circuit City, and one other whose name I can't remember. And all three of them came back. It's like the old joke about auto repairs. Oh, man, you need this, you need that, you need a whole new hard drive, you need a restorer, you need data. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars of repairs for something that could be fixed in about 70 seconds going into the BIOS. And so you need to be very careful, especially in this economy, where people feel justified out of necessity in cheating their clients and their customers. The scams are rampant all over the retail environment, all over repairs, all over, sadly, the Internet. We're having to slap around some of our advertisers at whatreallyhappened.com now because they're getting a little bit unethical, in my opinion. All right, that's it for our show. Have a good weekend. We're going to be back Monday, 5 p.m. Central Time, talking about this continued craziness. Do me a favor. This is a call to all you free-range humans. Take the story about the Goldstone Report being endorsed by the United Nations. Send it to everybody that you know because the TV networks want this to go away. Israel wants it to go away. You can get the truth out there. I need your help. Thank you, and aloha, America.